Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Interview. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an education service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on economic meltdown right after this. You know, when you make $50,000 a year, you pay $7,650 in Social Security taxes. Then you pay a 17% income tax on that $50,000. Now that's another $8,500 you just paid, an extra $1,300 by paying your tax on a tax. And that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%. It's not the 15.3% that's being advertised by government. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Call and ask for my free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining. It's educational. It's informative. Best of all, it's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, Tax and Status, the tax school, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, last time we were talking about the Pentagon, talking about this thing of economic meltdown from the international forecaster. Now, what we were talking about is Halliburton, Kellogg Brown, and Root, who are putting together, they got a $385 million construction contract to build some detention centers, kind of like that one they got down in Guantanamo. So we were talking about this thing of the government spying on us, and that spying on us has been going on, you know, for a long time. This Echelon program started in 1985 under the Reagan administration. So listening to your telephone calls, reading your faxes, and tuning in to your emails and your computer chat rooms has been old hat, and it's been going on for years and years and years. So this new flap over the intelligence that's being gathered by the NSA against the people here in the United States that is eavesdropping, according to Bob Chapman, is really a red herring. Because in that same defense bill is a $70 or $80 million allocation. Was it $70 or $80 million, or maybe it was $400 million? I kind of forgot now. But anyway, there's a ton of money being used to finance this old Echelon program, which has been in operation now for 20-plus years. Now, in addition to this, the Pentagon has presented legislation in Congress that would create an intelligence exception to the Privacy Act, allowing the FBI and others to share information about U.S. citizens with the Pentagon, the CIA, and other intelligence agencies. In 2001, Defense said, the U.S. Army's top intelligence officer wrote, "Contrary to popular belief, there is absolutely no ban on military intelligence components collecting U.S. personal information. The NSA has been collecting information on Americans since 9/11 and since 1985 using Echelon. You have no rights and you have no privacy. The National Counterterrorism Center's Central Repository now holds the names of 325,000 terrorist suspects, a fourfold increase since 2003. Now, did you take notice when Homeland Security dispatched heavily armed paramilitary mercenaries from Blackwater, the private security company, to openly patrol the streets of New Orleans? And that's just the beginning. Next, you're going to see your neighborhood under any pretense being patrolled by private mercenaries. Now, all the government has to do is to designate you as a potential terrorist, and you'll be picked up and imprisoned. An example is this fellow, Jose Padilla, who was imprisoned for possibly being an enemy combatant for 3 years, and he hasn't been charged with anything until recently. He was charged with something which was totally collateral to what he was arrested for. Now our president tells us that he has plenary, or unlimited, war powers as commander-in-chief for the duration in the war on terror, which could be forever. And you have no constitutional rights left, none. And if you do not act now to combat this menace, you will lose all of your freedom forever. Well, I don't know if we've got a supercilious statement here, but listen to this again. If our president tells us that he has unlimited war powers as commander-in-chief for the duration of the war on terror, which could be forever, you have no constitutional rights left. So if that statement's true, and if we have no constitutional rights left, then this last statement, if you don't act now to combat this menace, you'll lose all of your freedom forever. Well, if we've already lost all of our freedom, then there isn't any more freedom for us to lose. Second question that I have here, if you don't act now, what do you want us to do? What kind of action do I need to take at this juncture of time? Are we going to throw a temper tantrum, have an apoplectic fit? Are we going to revolt? Are we going to vote the rascals out? You know, one of the things that I've been observing here for, 25 years anyway, maybe longer, is that the talk show hosts and the underground or the newsletter writers have been writing letters like this and telling us that if you don't take action, and if you don't do this or if you don't do that, the sky's going to fall. So far, the sky hasn't fallen. It's like the old story of the little boy that cried wolf. Remember, he was bored one day, so he thought, well, if I cry wolf, we'll get some excitement in our lives. And so he did, and all the townspeople came out to fight off the wolf, and the little boy laughed at him and said, ha, 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 there's no wolf, but I sure had a good afternoon. So the people were ticked off, and they went back to work. And so a week or two later, the little kid, he's bored again, so he cries, wolf, wolf, and so all the townspeople come out. And of course, there's no wolf, and the little boy laughs and laughs, and he says, ha, 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 no wolf, and so this goes on 3, 4, 5 times, I don't know how many times, and then finally, one day, the little boy actually has a wolf in his flock of sheep, and he cries, wolf, wolf, and the people now have been fooled a couple of times. They say, well, that kid's just, he's just mocking us, and so we won't go out there. And so the wolf is out there eating his sheep. And that's where we're at here. The newsletter writers over the past 25, 30 years have been saying, hey, wait a minute, if we don't make these changes, if we don't do something drastic, you know, we're going to lose our freedoms, we're going to lose our constitution, we're going to lose our homes, we're going to lose our economy, we're going to lose our nation, you know, all this is going on, it hadn't happened yet. And so by now, when we're actually on the threshold, on the cusp of the meltdown of the world's economies, when America is in fact being taken over, nobody's listening, nobody's paying attention. So I'm not quite sure what it is that we're going to do. I'm pretty sure that if there's an election, the Republicans will be voted out and the Democrats will be voted in. Hell, isn't that why we voted the Democrats out and voted the Republicans in? I mean, it seems like to me, if I remember right, we were kind of fed up with the Clinton and the Democrats and all the graft and corruption and the erosion of our rights, privileges, and immunities under the Clinton and the Carter years. Wasn't that kind of what we were ticked off about? Now, in the last election, the last presidential election, we had a choice between Bush and Kerry, both of them skull and bones insiders. So, in effect, you didn't have any choice. And secondly, the Republicans are just as skilled at taking bribes as were the Democrats. So the Republicans, or the Republicrats, however you want to word it, are actually one and the same party with a couple of three mavericks thrown in for a little salt in the flavor. Now, as I took a look here in Bible prophecy, it isn't the Republicans, it isn't the Democrats, and it isn't George Bush. It's God Almighty himself that's destroying our nation. And for the rest of you Israelites out there, you remember that when America bites the dust, the rest of you are toast. You Australians, just take a look at your map and look who your friends to the north are. And in World War II, it was the Americans that saved your bacon from the Japanese, because without the Americans in the war, the Japanese, as they were island hopping south, weren't interested in 4 or 5 islands out there, you know, with a bunch of real neat native inhabitants. They were interested in that 3 million square miles of Australian subcontinent. That's what they're after. So tuck that one away in your heart. And the Canadians and the New Zealanders and the Western Europeans, when America goes down the tubes, then you're going to have to face Russia and China on your own. And you people in South America aren't even in the game, and you people in Africa aren't in the game. Nobody's going to attack South America after they have destroyed Western Europe and the United States. What are you people in Africa and South America going to do? You're going to sit down, fold your hands, and shut your mouths if you know what's good for you. Now, that's the bottom line to that story. So while America is being betrayed and destroyed from within by the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the general feeling in America in conservative circles is that if we can just get this message out, if we can just tell the American voter what's going on so that he knows what's going on. Hell, is there anybody in this country that's so deaf, dumb, and blind that he can't see what's going on? Your country is being destroyed. Let me give you a couple of examples of that. You want a new, more colorful, more beautiful $10 bill? Well, it makes its debut. Now listen to this line of lies. Washington, just in time for spring, the government infused a little color into the $10 bill on Thursday. The new bill, featuring shades of orange, yellow, and red, the rainbow money like the rest of the people in the world, joined colorized versions of the $20 bill and the $50 bill as the Bureau of Engraving and Printing attempts to stay ahead of counterfeiters and ever more sophisticated copying machines. Okay. What's the reason for this? Let me underline it. We're doing this so that we can stay ahead of counterfeiters and more sophisticated copying machines. I got to pause here for a little editorial review. The Federal Reserve and the banks are printing money and putting it into circulation at a prodigious rate. For instance, in 1987, when Alan Greenspan took over the Fed, the total amount of money in circulation in the United States, money in circulation was $3.4 trillion. Last week, it topped $10.4 trillion. That's three times as much. Three times as much money printed. Boys and girls, if every counterfeiter in America over the last 20 years, working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, could not have increased the money supply from $3.4 to $10.4 trillion in 20 years. And if they could, it would have been doing all of us a big favor. They're printing the money for free. You and I have to pay taxes to have the Bureau of Engraving and Printing print it. Any argument that the government is using over here saying, well, the reason that we're printing these new colored bills is to protect our monetary system from counterfeiters is in effect saying, we're trying to protect you from inflation. Boys and girls, they've increased the money supply by 300%. The biggest counterfeiting operation going on in this country is the Federal Reserve and the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. But it gets better. The Federal Reserve on Thursday began shipping the first $800 million of the new $10 bills to commercial banks. In the next few days, those bills will start showing up in cash registers around the country. $800 million bucks, a paltry $800 million. Every week, they increase the money supply by two or three and up sometimes up to $6 billion a week, boys and girls. And then on top of that, the commercial banks add three times that much in their lending. That's how fast the money supply is expanding here in the United States. The counterfeiters out there are like, I would like to liken the counterfeiters in America to a flea crawling up an elephant's ass with rape on their minds. Talk about preposterous poppycock. But there's more. The officials of the U.S. Treasury, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, the Federal Reserve, and the Secret Service participated in a spending ceremony at the National Archives. The location was selected because the new bill, which is still largely green, will feature in red letters the phrase, "We the People," from the Constitution, which is housed at the archives. Staying ahead of would-be counterfeiters is a top priority of the U.S. government, and in order to do that, our currency will need to be redesigned every 7 to 10 years, said U.S. Treasurer Ana Escobedo Cabral. Cabral stood next to Michael Lambert, assistant director for the Fed's payment system, who got the honor of spending the first new $10 bill at the archives gift shop, where he purchased a copy of the U.S. Constitution. I underlined that. Now, here's a guy by the name of Michael Lambert. He's a government official, and he spent the first $10 bill, this new $10 bill, into circulation at the archives gift shop, where he purchased a copy of the U.S. Constitution. Now, in that document that he bought, at Article 1, Section 10, it says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." You know, you talk about hypocrisy. That's as hypocritical as you going to church next Sunday and then signing a pledge card to pledge $10 a week or $50 a month or something for the church building fund so that the church can go out and borrow money from the bank and build some new building project, and you people can pay usury and interest on this bank loan using unjust weights and balances, which is what the Bible prohibits. So you have this kind of hypocrisy in your religious ideology, and you have this kind of hypocrisy in your government, which is what Edward Gibbon pointed out back in 1776. He said the debasement of the money of the Roman Empire was one of the five causes of the destruction of the empire, and it was destroyed from within also, not from without. These major civilizations and empires, they're not overcome by. Al-Qaeda is not going to conquer the United States Army. They're going to poop their pants and fall back in it. That's all they're going to accomplish. America will be destroyed, but when it's destroyed, it'll be by our God. It's not going to be by a bunch of ragheads over in the mountains of Pakistan. Now, that's your new, more colorful $10 bill. Then, there's another piece just came over the wire called the auto parts makers caught in a vice. Higher costs and relentless pressure to cut prices forces the Dana bankruptcy filing. This is Dana. It's an auto parts manufacturing company. U.S. auto parts maker Dana Corporation's decision to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection on Friday is going to throw sand in the gears of the already ailing United States auto industry. Hit by higher costs and a slowdown in truck sales at its two biggest customers, Ford and General Motors, Dana has been unable to stop bleeding red ink. Now the financial meltdown of one of the world's biggest suppliers will likely drive parts prices higher, putting further pressure on Ford and General Motors. And though the bankruptcy filing was not entirely unexpected, some Wall Street analysts were advising clients as recently as last week that the company would be able to avoid it. Dana had been in talks with its lenders and had hoped to negotiate new credit lines to stay afloat. But this week, after Dana missed an interest payment on outstanding debt, the company ran out of options. The general financial condition of the auto industry, together with Dana's inability to renew or expand its credit facilities in a timely manner, has significantly constrained Dana's liquidity, the company said in a statement. That's just Orwellian doublespeak, which means that we're bankrupt. And like much of the U.S. auto parts industry, Dana has been caught in a downward spiral that shows no signs of easing. Higher energy and raw materials costs have taken a bigger bite out of its revenues. A steep drop in vehicle sales, especially SUVs and light trucks, means fewer parts orders for the company, which makes brakes, axles, and other vehicle parts. And automakers looking to ease their own financial pain continue to pound their suppliers for lower prices. Parts customers like General Motors and Ford are increasingly demanding the so-called China price, according to Ephraim Levy, an auto industry analyst at Standard & Poor's. Parts companies used to be able to get a premium because they did the best job and their technology was better, said Levy. Now, their customers just say, we can get this done in China at a substantially lower price, so either match that price or we'll take the business away and forget the quality issue. The results is a mounting loss for the auto parts industry. In October, the Delphi Corporation, the biggest U.S. supplier, also filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Visteon Corporation, the second biggest, has announced plans to close three of its plants and put another six plants up for sale. And last year, Dana said that it would cut 5% of its workforce of 46,000, close three plants in North America and Australia, and sell parts of its businesses to sharply reduced costs. But those measures haven't been enough to get the company back on track. So in January, Dana said it lost nearly $1.3 billion in the third quarter of last year. Now, how do you like that? So let's hear it for free trade and globalization, shall we? Now, I think free trade and globalization is the greatest thing since sliced white bread. For the Chinese and the Indians and Japanese and everybody else in the world, it's a hell of a neat program because all of those people want to sell their products here in the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Western Europe. That's where the money's at. That's where the Israelite nations are located. That's where the birthright benefits are located. That's where the money's at, and that's what those people are after. And you can't blame them. I mean, I'm not raining on somebody's parade saying that Mexican over there should starve to death and freeze to death in the dark. Of course, he wants to come to the United States where the living is easy. But unfortunately, it was for him anyway, unfortunately, the contract was made with us. It's our contract, and it's our deal to win, lose, or draw. And like the prodigal son, we Americans, and in general, Israelites everywhere, have decided that we give the finger to our God, go it alone, cut a fat hog in the back, and rake in the profits. Well, all right, now that you've been doing that for the last 100 years or so, how are the results? How do you like it? And I want you to notice this Dana Corporation over here is trying to renegotiate loans with its creditors. Let me ask you this. If the Dana Corporation is a profitable company, let's just take, for example, they've got contracts with Ford and General Motors. And so they buy raw materials for $100, and then they work on those raw materials, and they spend $100 on labor, and they turn those raw materials into finished parts, and then they turn around and sell those finished parts to General Motors for $400. Didn't they make $200 profit? Well, if they just keep doing that over and over again, and their company is profitable, why do they need to borrow money? Now, you know, I run a profitable business. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm an investor. And then I use money to make money. But you know, United States currency is not money. It's what they tell you it is. It's currency. Money is gold and silver coin, which is what your Constitution tells you at Article 1, Section 10. It's what your God told you in Leviticus 19, 35, and 36. That's what money is. It's gold and silver coin. And currency is not an asset. Currency is not an asset. Money is an asset, but currency isn't. Currency is constantly depreciating. You put in an hour's work and collect $10. Then you save that $10. Next year, it'll buy $9 worth of goods and services. Currency is a liability, boys and girls. It's not an asset. Paper money is robbing you. And in fact, that's where your tax comes from. And then you were taught and trained from the time you were a little kid that you should retire. You shouldn't work until you die. You should only work for a while, and then you should retire. So you got into the Social Security program. Social Security takes 16% of everything you create and produce. The income tax, they take 17%. Those are two taxes out of 14 taxes that we all pay, or that we're all subject to paying. That's one-third of everything you create and produce from two taxes. Now, you still have 12 other taxes to pay. Honest to God, do you really believe that the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto are working in your best interest? No, I would say that in all probability, that the eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal, was working better for you than the second, calling for a heavy progressive income tax, or the fifth, which calls for a central bank, or the eighth, which calls for Social Security. The 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, coupled with free trade, are a deal that's made in heaven for the Chinese and the Indians and the Japanese and everybody else in the world. It's a project that is thought up and made in hell for Americans, Canadians, Australians, and New Zealanders. But, you know, they keep voting in the people that are selling this free trade and the outsourcing of jobs. And here, this Dana Corporation over here files for bankruptcy. They'll go upside down. All of their people will be out of work. And then all of you Dana workers, now you're going to go out and get a job somewhere else. Now, almost all these Dana workers and these Delphi workers, all these people are Democrats. By and large, union people vote the Democratic ticket. And it was Franklin D. Roosevelt, a Democrat, who came up with this nonsense of free trade back in the 1930s, along with Social Security, and let's raise the income tax from 60 to 90%. So, you know, it's not Republicans and it's not Democrats. It's you and me. You know, this old adage, you know, we have met the enemy and the enemy is us. Now, going on here with a little bit more here on the story of the International Forecaster, in 2000, a federal judge said that Arizona did not provide schools with enough money for English language learners, children who speak Spanish but very little English. So in 2005, the voters of Arizona banned the use of any language except English. Starting in January of 2006, the state was fined $500,000 a day for every day without a funding plan. 2 weeks ago, the fine was raised to $1 million a day, which means that the Republican administration in Washington, and they say it provides state English immersion. Only 11% of the children passed. In Arizona, only 11% of the children passed English immersion. That is, we're going to speak English here, which means 89% failed. 89% of the children in public school in Arizona failed their English test, and that's how your federal government is extorting the state of Arizona to violate state law. It's ridiculous, but that's the way it stands. So what you're going to do is you're going to allow all of these foreigners and aliens to come into your country, and then they don't have to change their language to English. You have to change your language, and you have to fund. Got that? You've got to fund and pay for the translators to teach these students in Spanish or Indian or Chinese or whatever other language I guess they speak. Now, why don't you immigrate to China? And then when you get over there, tell the Chinese government that you want them to fund their school system to pay for an English translator because you don't want to learn Chinese. Why don't you go down and try that in Mexico? Go over and do it in Germany. Now, you talk about people that have taken leave of their senses, that have gone insane. If the people of the United States have not gone insane, can you tell me? What in the hell is that going on? Let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Please be sure to order yours by calling the Law School Direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not necessarily mean that the publications or authors that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not endorsed by the Law Hour or not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. And for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Bob Chapman, by the way, publisher of the International Forecaster, has an internet site called theinternationalforecaster.com. It's internet, easy enough to remember. It's called theinternationalforecaster, all one word, .com. Their email, internationalforecaster@yahoo.com. Or you can write to them direct at Post Office Box 510-518, six digits, 510-518, Punta, P-U-N-T-A, Gorda, G-O-R-D-A, Florida, And here's the zip code. And he says, you got to use the zip code, because if you don't, he won't get your letter. And the zip code is 33951-0518. Got to have all nine digits. 33951-0518. That's the zip code. Let me take a little drink of water here. Wet my whistle a little bit, and let's take a little bit, take another look here. A federal judge in Arizona is in the process of fining the state of Arizona $1 million a day until they come up with a funding program to teach their students Spanish. Senate Judiciary Chairman Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania, is going to retire in 2008, and thus he won't be facing the voters again. His payoffs will come after he's out of office. As a result, he is endeavoring to expand immigration numbers as much as possible to satisfy his masters. The bill in Judiciary contains the McCain-Kennedy amnesty provisions, challenges the House bill's enforcement provisions, and increases legal immigration and much more. If this bill passes, it'll be a disaster for our country. It is designed, boys and girls, to be a disaster for our country. And that's because the Committee of 300 wants to deport all the people from the North American continent. That includes you Canadians. And they're going to turn North America into a big game preserve. Well, that's what they tell me, and that's what they're writing in their papers, in their books. These are the greenies and the ecology freaks, and they're in the process of destroying the nation. Now, two nations, Canada and the United States. Now, in addition to that, when these two countries, Canada and the United States, go down, it's the bulwark against the godless forces of communism and atheism around the world. Not that the forces of atheism and communism aren't at work in the United States. We Americans practice all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, all 10. And just to give you a couple of ideas, remember that you pay an income tax where you live. That's the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. Our Constitution doesn't provide for an income tax. Our founding fathers didn't give us an income tax. We thunk that up on our own and added that. And then that central bank story, well, our founding fathers did give us a central bank called the U.S. National Bank. It was a private consortium. We did a little better the second time around. The second time, we put Federal Reserve on it so that everybody would think that it's governmental in nature. It isn't, but everybody thinks that it is. And it makes us feel real good as we practice the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for a central bank. And then the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto, we got that one from Franklin D. Roosevelt. Social Security, the industrial or the National Industrial Army. Isn't that just real special? And then we got public schools, too. And those public schools, you know, come from the tenth plank to the Communist Manifesto. Our forefathers hadn't thought of that, so we had to add that one on also. If you take a look at all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, we practice all 10. And we love it. And if you want to know why America's economy is melting down, it's because socialism always destroys the nation and the economy and the people that are in it. It's always been that way. Take a look at the Chinese communists. When they came to power in the 1940s, between 1949 and 1957, they killed 47 million Chinese people. 47 million. They killed more people in 6 years than all of World War II, with all of its combatants, all of its bombs, nuclear and conventional. And that was just to solidify power. So when Jesus of Nazareth talked about wars and rumors of wars, he wasn't whistling Dixie through a straw hat. That's just a couple of examples. Now, it's expected that $1 trillion out of $7.6 trillion in mortgages written in the first 6 months of 2005 are likely to default. These mortgages are packaged into pools and bonds and are issued against them. The amount of bonds backed by these high-risk loans more than doubled since 2001 to $476 billion. So there are two branching points feeding the potential housing bubble explosion. First, the home mortgages themselves, and then second, the bonds issued against those mortgages. Let's just run a number here. Let me take one and divide that by seven, which is 14.28%. So about 15% of mortgages this year are going to default. Now, I don't know what the catalyst is going to be here. At some point in time, there's a catalyst coming that's going to spark the meltdown of the American economy. And when we start melting down, the rest of the world's going to melt down with us. For instance, in Germany right now, they're suffering from a recession. They're in recession now. And the reason for that is that Americans have stopped buying in the last two quarters of 2005. They haven't stopped, but slowed down dramatically. And this slowdown has affected German exports. And Germany was right on the borderline of recession anyway. Now, you just take a look at around the world, you know, when the American buying machine shuts down, which it's just about to do, when it shuts down, it's going to affect the Chinese and the Indians and everybody else around the world. And then, of course, the New World Order people will come in and they will blame gold, number one, and they will blame whites, number two, And they will blame the United States and Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Western Europe, number three, in that order. And then they will suggest that we go to the cashless society, and you'll just work, and all of your numbers, you know, all of what you're working for, whether it's dollars or screwdrivers or euros or whatever, will be directly deposited in the bank. And I suspect that people like me won't be able to get a bank account, won't be able to get your number. And if you don't have this number, you won't be able to buy, sell, or trade. Let me share that one with you. See, right now it's difficult to buy, sell, or trade without having some kind of a government number. It's almost always Social Security. But in Revelation chapter 13, there's a little story here about a thing called the mark of the beast. This mark of the beast, I think, is Social Security. At least the number is. Let's take a look here. Everybody in the world's got the Social Security number. And in verse 15 starts off, this is chapter 13, verse 15, says, and he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Those of us that don't worship, worship is obedience too. Those of us that will not obey, will not practice the law of the beast. If we practice the law of God in place of the law of the United States or the law of the United Nations, the law of this beast power coming up, then we should be killed. It doesn't say that you will be killed. It says that you should be. The law is going to prescribe it. Now, the law prescribed that Daniel be killed for obeying God and keeping his commandments. They couldn't quite get the job done. The prescription was that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego should be killed, but they couldn't get the job done. That's why I want to point out that if you obey God and keep his commandments, you should be killed, but you won't. God won't allow it. In verse 16, he says, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. And that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. So here's wisdom. Let him that has understanding count the number of the beast, because it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. That's the 666 number. You probably heard that bandied about. I don't have a clue as to who this is. Just goes to show you here. Here is wisdom. Let him that has understanding. Obviously, I don't have wisdom, and I don't have understanding. I'd like to get it. I'd like to have it. In fact, in Daniel 12, Big Mike told Daniel to close it up and seal it to the time of the end, that the wise would understand. Well, I don't quite have that one down pat. Maybe someday I will. Maybe I'll die and go into my hole in the ground, never understand it. It's no big deal. Daniel died and went into a hole in the ground. He didn't understand it either, so it's not the worst thing in the world that can happen to him. But you're not going to be able to buy, sell, or trade without being numbered, and if you don't have a ration card, you're not going to be able to buy anything anywhere. You're not going to be able to work unless you've got the number. Hell, it's already that way. You can't work if you don't have a Social Security number. Not that I can figure any good reason why anybody would want to go to work. There's no money in employment. The money is in buying, selling, and trading. The money is in investing. The money, that is real money, in gold and silver, is in buying, selling, and trading, investing, and doing private business. There's an old adage that says gold is the currency of kings, and silver is the currency of gentlemen. Barter is the currency of peons or serfs, and credit is the currency of slaves. Well, if credit is the currency of slaves, the Dana and Delphi corporations are right at the top of the list, along with all their employees, along with all of the, or most of the people in the United States that are in debt. Debt is the currency of slaves. Fortunately, I'm not doing business in debt, so maybe I'm a step above that. I do like to barter, though. Barter's not a bad business, but gold and silver is a little better. So tuck that one away in your heart in Revelation 13. You're not going to buy, sell, or trade, and so they'll come to you and they'll say, hey, listen, you're in debt, and we're going to take your house away from you, and you're working over here at the Delphi Company or the Dana Company. Tell you what we're going to do. If you want to keep working, and you want to save your house and save your car, then you come down here and you get this number, and you take your direct deposit account and sit down, shut up, and fold your hands, and everything's going to be fine. You people will line up to get your mark. I mean, you're going to line up, and thank God that you got it. Now, there's a few crazies, you know, out here, like me and Bob Chapman and a few others, and we're going to work as hard as we can to avoid the mark of the beast. So I don't have a Social Security number. I don't draw Social Security. I stay as far away from Social Security as I can get. And one of the things that bothers me is that my government is going to come up with compulsory medical insurance or something, and then want to throw me in a concentration camp because I don't want free vaccinations for the elderly, or I don't want free drug coverage. I don't want Medicare. I don't want Social Security. I don't want Medicaid or Medi-Cal. I want them to stay as far away from me as I can get. Now, of course, most people look at me and say, well, you're some kind of a nut. How come you don't come in here and take your freebies? Because people that take the freebies are beholden to their masters. And I want to be the master. I don't want to be beholden to somebody else. And on top of that, there's more money to be made working over here in private trade than there is dinking around out here working for the Dana Corporation or Delphi or somebody else. So if you're sitting out here saying, oh my God, I've got my job over here and I'm a tenured professor here at the university. A lot of times students come here and say, oh my God, I've got seniority here. Yeah, that's right. Very soon you'll have seniority with the mark of the beast. And when God gets through with you, you people out there with the mark of the beasts, you're going to be sad puppies. He says, on the one hand, if I get hold of you, I'm going to kill you. And then the state comes along and says, well, if we get hold of you, we're going to withhold everything from you so you'll starve to death. So I'm going to take my chances with starving to death rather than face God eyeball to eyeball. Chapman goes on. He says, it's expected dollar volume of mortgage loans may fall 25% this year. We're talking about mortgages now, home values. This is borne out by the monthly housing index. It's a gauge of building confidence in the single-family home market, which is at its lowest level since April of 2003. Now, you've been listening to pundits for the last year talking about the housing bubble. Well, the peak of the housing bubble occurred in June of 2005, leveled off, and it's been heading down ever since. It doesn't mean that it collapses overnight. It just keeps going down, down, down. Pretty soon, you'll be able to buy houses a lot cheaper than you could before. And if you're in the business, you're a speculator, and you went out and you bought a house for $200,000, and you're in hopes of selling it for $300,000, but the price doesn't go up to $300,000, it goes down to $150,000, you take it in the shorts. That's what life is all about as an investor. Sometimes you buy right, sometimes you don't buy so good. Our president last week told an audience in Milwaukee that the economy was growing at 3.5%. Unemployment was down to 4.7%. More than 4 million new jobs were created in the past 30 months. Home ownership was at record levels. And after-tax income was up 8% over the past 4 years. You got that? Let me repeat that. The president of the United States told us that the economy is growing at 3.5%. Unemployment is down to a piddly 4.7%. And that 4 million new jobs were created in the last 30 months, and that home ownership is at record levels, and that after-tax income is up 8% over the last 4 years. Now, how many of you people out there listening to me right now can say, my income is up 8% over the past 4 years? Or that I'm not one of those 4.7 unemployed. Now, what the president left out was that the economy grew 3.5% because the money and credit rose 10%, devaluing consumer buying power. Okay. So what they're doing is they're printing money and putting it into circulation. And then they count that as gross domestic product. Boys and girls, if you took that money out of circulation or you didn't print it, the economy is in recession. The American economy is not growing 3.5% a year. It is contracting at 3.5% a year. And to cover that up, they are printing more money. Makes you feel good. But in the end, when that new money hits the marketplace, and it takes about 30 months for that money to filter through the marketplace over here to drive prices up, you're going to be paying twice as much, and you're going to be making something less. All of you Dana and Delphi workers are going to be making something less than you were making, and prices are going to double. Now, how's that going to fit in? Now, I didn't tell you that unemployment was 13%, because those who could not get a decent job aren't counted anymore. See, they count your unemployment now. When you're unemployed and you're drawing unemployment, they count you as being unemployed. When your unemployment runs out, they don't count you anymore. Now, there's a bunch of people out there that have run through their unemployment benefits and they have not been reemployed. And then we have people that are underemployed. These are people that are straight A students, go to college, keep their noses clean, and do all the right things. And they come out of college and they get a job with some big corporation and they get laid off. And then they can't find another job that pays them $40,000 or $50,000 a year. So then they take a job driving cab or working at McDonald's or greeting people at the door of Walmart, working for $5 or $6 an hour. And the president says, see, we created all these new jobs, 4 million new jobs, greeting people at Walmart, flipping burgers at McDonald's, in place of working, making machine tools and parts at Delphi or Dana Corporation, which paid, by the way, $27 an hour. As well, the president left out that over the past 4 years of recovery, 10 million jobs should have been created, and that only 3 million were actually created. He did not address the 5 million jobs that were offshored or outsourced during the last 4 years. And we hear nothing of the 3.3% rate at which subprime borrower homeowners are losing their homes, nor that the 8% gain in income was offset by a 40% loss in purchasing power. And they call that the recovery. See, boys and girls, economics isn't taught in school. Handling money is not something that you learn in school. They avoid money and economics in school like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Then when you go to college, they teach you Keynesian communist economics. Americans have bought into it, and so has everybody else in the world, and that's why the world is on the brink now of economic meltdown. You'll live to see it very shortly now, because there's nothing that's going to stop it. There isn't any magic panacea. It doesn't depend upon how you vote in the upcoming elections. It doesn't depend upon what you do at church next Sunday or how you perform on the job during the week. I didn't create it, and I'm not going to stop it. There isn't anything I can do but report on it. That's all Bob Chapman can do. He's reporting on these facts and saying, okay, we hear you, Mr. President. We saw you on CBS Evening News as you were speaking to that group, and you told us that wages are up 8%, but inflation's up 40% over the same 30 months. Boys and girls, inflation is growing at the rate of 10 to 12% a year. Now, just take 12, 24, 36, 48, and it's compounded annually. And I'm not telling you something that you probably couldn't figure out yourself, but and especially it harms and hurts those that are retired on Social Security. This is one of the reasons that I didn't waste my time on retirement. I could see years ago that when I got to be 65 years old, boy, I better put my head down and keep charging straight ahead. Because if I didn't, I'd starve to death in the process. But, you know, you're retired on Social Security, and the government comes along with their hedonic calculations, and they say inflation is 3.4%, and we're going to give you a 3.4% increase in your Social Security check. What a bunch of lying scumbags. The truth of the matter is, you've lost 10% in purchasing power over that same year. You got a net loss here of 6%. That's the bottom line. And so then they come along and say, well, you were buying Kansas City strip steak, and the price of that went up, and so that left you buying stew so you could have mulligan stew, and the price of that went up, and so now you can eat hamburger, and the price of that goes up, then you can eat Alpo. Come on, boys and girls, time to wake up and smell the coffee, don't you think? Wake up and smell the coffee. All right, economic meltdown. We'll be talking about the Committee of 300 as we progress along in this thing of Russia's two-tier economy and their money. Jack Murtha, the Marine representative in Argentina in 2001, they went through it. If they can do it, I guess we can. I'm about out of time. Let me give you a final reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.